Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you are doing well. And it is amazing that we are in the final few weeks of the NBA season. And while it is a lot of fun, the unfortunate thing is that we're starting these few weeks off with some unfortunate play from the Memphis Grizzlies. But in this month of May, I wanted to take a bit of a different turn when it comes to the podcast. Wanted to invite some of my favorite folks when it comes to the Grizzlies fandom, Grizzlies Twitter, whatever it may be. And I'm glad to welcome one of my favorite followers on Twitter. His name is Chase Lucas. Chase, how are you doing this afternoon, sir?
Oh, I'm as good as I could be, considering the Grizzlies circumstances. How are you?
Doing well. Chase, for those who have been obviously following the Grizzlies for a while, Chase has written for Grizzly Bear Blues, obviously follows the team. The reason why I wanted to get Chase on the show is a lot of times some of my favorite conversations on Twitter are between me, Chase, and others, so it's a pleasure to have him. Now, Chase, I will ask this question. You used to write for Grizzly Bear Blues. Have you done anything since then when it comes to the Grizzlies, or is it more just a fandom approach from you over the past few years?
It's more of a fandom. Around the time I stopped there, a lot of things changed in my professional life. And so it just became a lot easier. Twitter is about the amount of characters, probably that my takes warrant, but also, you know, that I had time to commit to. So I like being on there. I like reading everybody's stuff, but honestly, those kind of Twitter back and forths, it kind of reminds me what Twitter maybe was originally meant to be, which is almost like a micro blogging site. And so I enjoy just putting out my takes and receiving others through Twitter primarily.
And that's the whole focus of this month of May, why I'm going to line it up with folks to discuss the stretch run of the season. Hopefully, you know, a bit of a run in the playoffs is, you know, the folks that I love that, you know, talking Grizzlies with, you know, fans, folks who cover it, bloggers. That's what we're going to have this month in May. But Chase, we'll get right into it. Of course, you can follow the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSEC. This episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. Visit rockauto.com today. But wanted to bring Chase on because, you know, me and him have had a few discussions. Folks across, you know, Grizzlies, you know, social media have had the discussions as well. Chase, it's not been a great week for the Grizzlies after a wonderful weekend of play in Portland. But, you know, the two losses earlier this week against Denver and Portland, you can kind of accept, you know, you won enough in April to accept them. But this weekend against the Magic just was less than ideal. It was unfortunate level of play for the Grizzlies. Your biggest concern, number one, are you concerned? But number two, your biggest area of concern for the Grizzlies right now after their struggles this weekend?
You know, am I concerned is interesting because when I'm watching the games, it's probably a different answer than, you know, on a Sunday in the middle of the day with a little more clarity and perspective. But honestly, in the short term, I guess there are some long-term things I am a little bit concerned about. But for this season, I think it's fair. I think you messaged me to ask about coming on the podcast before the home game against Portland. And so at that point, like you said, we were kind of riding high off two back-to-back Portland wins. The Denver one was kind of a write-off if you have any awareness of what an NBA schedule does and what it means to play in Denver. And then it's been kind of off the wheels. I would say, I guess for this season, my concerns are just the fact that obviously this has to be taking some sort of psychological toll that they keep losing these close games. And honestly, the Magic, losing to the Magic when you have, I think, a 20-point lead. And to be honest, I see all 48-plus minutes of just about every game. I didn't catch that one until about 6.5 minutes left in the fourth. But to blow something, a lead like that against a team like that, I mean, not to put too much weight on betting odds and things like that, but they were 12, 13 point favorites. There's, you know, people will say, oh, you know, you have too high expectations of this team. And that is true to some degree, but you are supposed to win that game last night, regardless of any outside factors. So it's concerning. I think the biggest concern for me is just all the things that made the Grizzlies, I think it's fair to say, a pretty darn good team. They don't exist in the same way now. Primarily, their strength this year to me And this, my preseason, before we even started playing preseason games, my expectations were more in line with sort of the national consensus, maybe just on the outside of the play-in tournament. And then by the time we got to the end of the preseason, I started thinking, I think this might be kind of a perfect COVID season team with the condensed schedule, knowing that you're going to have injuries and COVID concerns. It turned out we had a big pause. And this team, I think, was kind of built for that. So by the time we got into the regular season, I started thinking, this team could be a little better than what we thought. And they have been. But I think a lot of that has been depth, not necessarily in the sense that the bench is running people off the floor. I think that's come and gone. They've been good at times, a little inconsistent at others, but more so from the fact that when people go out, we're replacing them with not just quality players, but surrounding Ja and Jonas, and even Dylan to some degree, it's people who come in to fill those roles are not just qualitatively solid NBA players, but they are low usage. They are get in where you fit in kind of guys. They're not going to make noise. I mean, you know, when you throw in somebody like a John Conchar, he is not going to be hunting for shots. He'll take an open three if he's got it. He'll do the dirty work. And what you've got now is, which in the long term is a positive, but you're working in two players in Jaren and Justice who are not just not only not playing very well right now, which is, you know, Justice really hasn't played well pretty much for the entirety of his Grizzlies run this year. Jaren started off kind of playing, you know, with that really promising start, especially the Portland game. And now he's really struggling. So those guys aren't just guys you're struggling, but you're taking out all these solid players around sort of your focal points, a way that everyone understood to play. And now you've got high usage guys. And in, at least in Jaren's case, I'm sure we'll talk about Justice, but at least in Jaren's case, I think it's undeniable he needs to be a high usage player. So the problem is this sort of, I call it waves of competence is what I think we were beating people with. It's just no matter what happened to us, we always had some slightly above or way above replacement level rotation player ready to step in where other teams do not. Now you're telling two guys who are not playing well, that we're going to have you play and play a lot and be responsible for a ton of possessions. And it, to me, that has just kind of thrown everything out of whack in terms of what made the Grizzlies this kind of overachieving or solid NBA basketball team.
That's a very interesting take, and I think there's a lot of logic with it. That's an enjoyable perspective to hear. You know, a couple of things, though, to hit on your point is that what made the Grizzlies overachieve, what made them succeed in a year, even with injuries that they've dealt with and have several of their best players out, the thing that stands out about this team, Chase, is the fact that where they create their advantage against a lot of better teams is through energy, effort, hustle. And with how much played, those being able to tap into those sources are just not there as they once were, which is natural. You know, their ability to score off turnovers, second chance points, fast break, all that. It doesn't seem like they're as effective in those areas as they once were because they're naturally tired. That should not overshadow the fact, though, that was always expected when this season was going into how condensed of a second half schedule, especially they were going to have. But it's expected that the fatigue was going to take a part, and I certainly think it has. My concern is the countering to that fatigue. The fact that now we're more tired than we usually have been, but we're now playing more undisciplined basketball, and it also seems like the effectiveness of the adjustments and the schemes that Coach Jenkins was doing well with in the first half of the season, it's not there as much. So we knew that the fatigue was eventually going to settle in. We were hoping our depth would be able to make it have less of an impact, but now we're also coupling it with undisciplined play, and it just seems like Coach Jenkins is not as consistent with his adjustments. Is that kind of a fair way to assess this team right now?
I think so, and I think obviously the largest conversation around the team has been, you know, how much are they going after wins right now versus development? And that manifests itself primarily in the conversation around Justice, around Jaren, you know, to some degree, Tyus, but that's really intertwined with the Justice thing. But it also kind of, you know, which we don't think about, you're right to point out fatigue. Undeniably, this team, along with the Spurs, have the most difficult schedule, disregard opponents, but the most difficult schedules in terms of games in X number of days. Because both teams were, you know, basically right around the time the NBA shifted their sort of philosophy on what to do with a team with multiple COVID positives or issues with contact tracing. They just said, we're going to shut you down. So that's what the Spurs and the Grizzlies both had to deal with, which creates this condensed schedule. So I think that, but back to your point, I don't think that the whole, how much are you going for wins? How much are you trying to see what you've got for the future? It doesn't just exist within who are you playing, but also within that depth, because if they were chasing every win, you know, Taylor Jenkins really could be moving and adjusting game by game with who has the most energy, both from kind of, you know, a more abstract eye test kind of way, but even from a medical and statistical standpoint. I mean, if you really were chasing every win, you could run Tyus Jones out there on a back-to-back and play him his normal minutes because he's on completely fresh legs. You could be rotating in Conchar in, not to bring up John Conchar for the second time, but, you know, you could be upping Melton's minutes after he's had a down night where he didn't play as many. So there's definitely things, if the goal was, hey, let's go chase every win, that they could be doing differently. I think I may be assumed to be in the camp of let's chase every win. I don't think that's entirely true. I'm more of a mix. I just disagree on the Winslow stuff about whether that equates to development. But no, to your point, I think the fatigue is absolutely a factor. It's hard for me. Coaching, I think this is true for a lot of people. It's one of the hardest things to evaluate. I don't pretend to be smart enough about coaching to evaluate it. There are people with completely opposite opinions of Taylor Jenkins, whose opinions I respect. But certainly, if you just say that the way to handle overall roster management and the way that a team performs in the clutch, if you're going to put a fair amount of that on coaching, you would, I think, have to be fair to say this has not been the most successful or impressive stretch of Taylor Jenkins' young career.
And I think that's absolutely fair to say. I think that you can have two truths when it comes to Taylor Jenkins. He absolutely should be in the conversation for a top 10 coach of the year for what he's done with this team. And we'll get into that conversation in a bit. He should be there. But yes, I do think that you are seeing that some of the areas where there's clear need for improvement for this team to really take the next step to be a sustainable winner is clutch time decisions, is roster decisions and things such as that. And Chase, you know, final look at this part of things is, so the front office said that data accumulation was the main focus of this season from their perspective. The players clearly wanted to make the playoffs after last year's play-in game did not work out. I think it's fair to say that the data accumulation has worked, but the team has once again been more successful than maybe it was anticipated. Maybe it's because of their depth. Maybe it's because of the season. I don't know. But it does seem like at this point that it, with the how much effort and just overall passion these players have played with to make the playoffs, you would hope that there would not be as much area for folks to, I guess for a better word, speculate that there may be, you know, a disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff. I don't think there is, but it seems like that there should be a clear focus on this team making the playoffs. That's what this roster wants. But yet, I don't know if you can say that. Is that kind of concerning to you? Or do you feel there may be a disconnect between the coaching staff or the front office, or it's just a young team being inconsistent at the wrong time?
I think it's probably a lot of the latter. I don't think there's a disconnect between the coaching staff and the front office necessarily about the role of development or even which players they want, you know, filling out that rotation. Now, I think there's a disconnect between what some fans think. And I think the most frustrating part of the argument is, I think where a lot of this has been framed is, well, if you don't agree with what the front office and coaching staff in tandem are doing, then you don't understand that those entities are after data accumulation and long-term goals. There is a third option where you cannot like that because you think that what they're doing is not the right direction to maximize data accumulation in the pursuit of long-term goals. So, I mean, that's sort of a nuanced thing, but that's kind of where I exist in it. But it's, you know, you brought up another interesting point, and that is the challenge of this coaching staff and front office. You mentioned the way the team performed and sort of the season has gone along. Those two things, the sort of accumulating data, evaluating the team, and maximizing wins, it's remarkable if you look at it the degree to which those two things had to have almost zero conflict over the majority of the season. The only thing that jumps out is if you wanted to say releasing, you know, Gorgui Jang was sort of those two things were butting up against each other in that scenario. But really, what the injuries and what the COVID issues did for the coaching staff in the front office is, I mean, there were very rarely times that there were much of a decision to make. I mean, the rotation sort of set itself for months at a time until, you know, Justin and now Jaren have gotten reintegrated. So it's been a very odd season because I think there was so little conflict. You had to respect what the Grizzlies were doing and the wins they were scraping out. And then, you know, of course, there will always be things to complain about from a fan perspective. But it's kind of remarkable to the way that I don't want to say cruise control because that would really diminish what the coaching staff did. But in terms of just choosing how many people are we going to play and who are we going to play, it was almost like sort of life was making that decision for them up until recently. And now things that were once sort of on the same track are extremely divergent. So that's kind of how I see where we're at now.
I agree. You know, it just seemed like there was perfect. It was right. It was a parallel. It was a successful synchronization, for lack of a better way of putting it, of the goals of data accumulation and the fact that the accumulation looked positive with how our depth had developed. But it may have. We probably have not won more than this team anticipated. But now it seems like we're in a situation where the desire to win now, for the franchise, especially the front office, the desire to win now is probably superseded a bit by still wanting to figure out long-term, places for players on the roster. It seems like those are of equal value, or maybe the latter even of more value to the franchise. Whereas to the fans, it seems like with the position that we've been in and how the players have played and what they've said, all the focus should be on making the playoffs. So that's not really very a disconnect. It's just contrasting views, and it's not helped out when play is not successful coming right after it was successful in early April. So I think you bring up a great point, but you know, the one thing about this team though, is that it's won at different times this season for several different reasons. Coming up, I'm going to ask Chase about his thoughts on what the identity of this team is and what he hopes it should be going forward when we come back with the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Imagine you are the hiring expert for your company. And what you really need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule the complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed Skills Test that on average reduces hiring by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests and add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to TalentNest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. That's Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Go with Indeed.
So, Chase, I'll just come out and directly ask you, based off what you've seen this season, what do you feel is the most advantageous identity of this team? And is that identity that you think this team has the identity that you think it needs to have going forward? Do those two perspectives line up in terms of this team continuing to be successful into next year?
There's things I'd want to keep from this season in terms of identity. And of course, identity kind of can be branched off into the actual on-court style of play, really quantifiable things. And then of course, there's sort of that more ethereal attitude and to what degree that, you know, those things exist, kind of your mileage may vary. But the things I've liked from this year are kind of the obvious things, which are there's been solid energy. I think without question, no matter what happens from here, I think you could probably say, if we are kind of dipping into the more abstract stuff, that Ja has taken on even more of a leadership role. It's hard at his age, but what's kind of great, and I guess you can either say this was a product of coincidence, or you can give the front office a lot of credit for this. But when you have a team as young as ours, it lets somebody who is as young as Ja potentially assume a leadership role that otherwise, you know, he was vocal last year, but it's hard to come in as a rookie, especially when there are some true veterans on the team, and be the primary voice. But when essentially every important player is 25 and under, no offense to Kyle and Jonas, who are important players, but both of those guys' personalities are such that, you know, they're guys you want on a team as young veterans, because they're not going to ruffle any feathers, and they're kind of excited to have anyone else take on a vocal leadership role. So that's what I'd want to keep. That's, I think, been really cool that Ja has gotten to have a roster of seemingly guys who are willing to sort of be led by a young superstar or budding superstar such as himself. And it also helps that his style of play is, Ja's going to make a lot of players a lot of money over his career. He goes on these stretches of scoring. I think that'll be part of his maturation, is to figure out that calibration, and eventually he will increase that scoring. But he's always going to be a guy looking for teammates. So that, I would say, has been a positive. You know, my outlook at the beginning of this season was, when we got started, and we were in a very different place with COVID at the time. We were pretty much seeing that there were going to be a lot of stoppages, a lot of guys missing games. Jaren was going to come back later than we thought. And so my opinion was, none of this really matters. Like, let's let them play, scrap out some wins, but none of it is much that we can take forward. I think I was pretty wrong about that. It just sounds more like a bad mood, really. But they, in terms of long-term identity, if you're talking about more on the court stuff, what I want, the on-court identity of this team, is something they've not had the luxury of attempting, at least offensively. I mean, I want that Ja, Jaren, pick and roll, pick and pop, to be the modern day evolution of what we saw from Mike and Mark for so many years. Again, you've got Jonas, who I think, if they want him to be, can be a really important part of this team for several more years. But, you know, he's a dirty work kind of player. And, you know, if they decide not, then that's fine. Depends on what they can get for him. But that's what I want to see. And that's why, you know, I view what's going on with Jaren, I don't think the way that forcing Jaren, and hopefully he's in the starting lineup soon, I'm not sure that the rest of this season, more Jaren is going to equal more wins. And I'm okay with that. That's a situation where I'm like, they've missed so much time to develop together. I want every minute of Ja and Jaren two-man game that they can get in live NBA action. So that's kind of where I would hope the offensive identity of the team is. The other one is really more of a roster management thing for me, is if the identity is going to be depth, your identity can really only be depth for so long as the bill starts to come due on your young cornerstones. So, you know, I think they've built out a roster in such a way that could actually continue to be a strength and part of the identity of the team. But, you know, I think they'll be opportunistic. If somebody pops open that isn't probably a sub superstar, but somebody they can go get, then great. But yeah, basically offensive identity, I hope that Jaren can get healthy, and it's their two-man game with shooters around, and at times Jonas making up for, you know, whatever interior deficiencies Jaren may have.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, right? That you want the identity to be as much connected to Ja and Jaren as possible, because of the fact that, you know, those are your two best players. So the more your identity is connected to them, the more likely it's going to be at a high quality consistently that you're going to need to win. But, you know, I've mentioned a time or two is about the ability to both shoot and defend the three, and that those were areas we needed to improve in this year from last year to really be a playoff contender. I don't know if the consistency's been there, but, you know, we are in the second half of the season, seventh in the league when it comes to defending the three, and we're coming off a month in which we were top 10 in shooting the three. Chase, just from watching this team, which do you think is more sustainable based off what you've seen this year, defending the three or shooting the three, and what's more important going forward? Because I certainly think we've taken strides in both areas.
You know, I'll encourage people. I think you had somewhat recently a tweet that highlighted the ways in which this team has been a different version of itself and how that pendulum has kind of swung back and forth, offense and defense. I think that speaks to young team, but I think that speaks to this season is just nuts, which is a point I keep hitting on, but it's just true. And so it's hard. We actually did this a little bit last year where we had a month that was like, oh my gosh, the Grizzlies offense. Can you believe that they're getting this out of this roster? And then it flipped and it was like, the offense is about what you've expected, but man, are these guys defending. In terms of specifically the three, I'd prefer, I'll always kind of take not aesthetically because I, you know, the grit and grind were the best years of my sports fandom life, but just in terms of value, I'll take the shooting, especially because I hope Ja can get up to whatever you want to call as sort of a baseline, whatever the percentage is that you want the guy taking it, but that you don't want the guy hunting it, which maybe is, you know, somewhere around 33-34%, whatever it may be. But as long as he's there, not just because shooting is a weakness for him, that may or may not continue, but his ability to find guys, I will take the Grizzlies being able to shoot the three and shoot it well. I mean, that stretch that they had where, you know, you had seemingly all the three-point shooters or guys who aspire to be three-point shooters seems to all be hitting at the same time was a heck of a lot of fun. So I guess that would be my answer if I had to pick between the two, just because altogether, while both extremely important, you know, offense, I think if you're given the choice is a little more important than defense in this version of the league.
And then if we're talking about the identity of this team, Chase, I think another thing that's so enjoyable, you know, you just mentioned, you know, up until this point when it comes to the NBA, the height of your, you know, fandom was the grit and grind era. And I agree with you that it was the same for me. But just how lucky is it to see that one thing that stood out about that grit and grind era that probably made it more successful than it should have been, especially when you consider the Grizzlies roster building failures right before it came into place and considering the, you know, roster setup that they had, the culture off the court that was created was such a boost to that grit and grind era. We're seeing the same thing develop for this next generation, whatever you want to call this version of the Grizzlies era, but just the cohesiveness, the fraternal aspect of things that's with this roster, like it was with the grit and grind era. How important and how fun is it to see in this new era, this new version of the Grizzlies that may have a higher ceiling than any previous version of the Grizzlies? How special is it to know that it also has a great culture and just a wonderful sense of brotherhood about it that makes it even more fun beyond just them exceeding expectations on the court?
You know, I am hesitant to put, because I think part of the problem is I think any fan base with a team that's winning is likely to try to attribute some of that stuff to the team that's winning. You know, my joke is kind of, I think it's fun to go through the 30 NBA teams, and I did it once, and I think it was like 25 or something that were markets where you could reasonably see that fan base saying, oh, actually we like that. They're going to love this particular player because he's such a hard-nosed guy. They just love a blue-collar player. And so most people like to think that about themselves, you know, if they can and if they can attach it to the identity of their city. However, it was obviously real with grit and grind, right down to the fact that the marketing that exists to this day that kind of came before and led into the marketing for this era was something entirely organic. Obviously the Tony stuff, but even other things that came about. So I think that was kind of special in a lot of ways. I think that was legit. Another thing I think is pretty legit, and who knows, because who knows what happens with this roster, but I do think they put together a group of guys that all enjoy playing with each other. And I think that's been part of their strength this year. That's part of that bring your own energy that you mentioned was going to be needed in a COVID season. They've done that to the greatest extent I think that could have been expected. Youth helps, but liking each other also helps. And you haven't really seen, you know, Kyle Anderson is, I think, always interesting to hear talk or to read if there's a feature on him. I think there was a feature story recently on him in the Daily Memphian, but just because he's kind of in that middle of everything. He's in the middle kind of age-wise. He's kind of in the middle in terms of his role and how certain it is to be there going forward. He's kind of in the middle to back end of Taylor Jenkins's ideal style of play. He has some of that, but not all of it. And then his personality is just kind of this relaxed, chill guy for the most part. And I think for whatever reason, I've just found in his interviews, you hear a lot about that camaraderie. So I think it's cool. I think it's fair to say, if you want to say of all of the potential superstars that have come in drafts lately, again, I'm hesitant to apply this stuff too much because it's sort of the natural inclination to want to do it for any fan of a team. But I will say, if you wanted to pick out the recent, you know, potential stars, potential superstars that have come into the league, Ja's personality probably meshes best with Memphis. If you could have picked any of them purely off of personality, if you said, hey, all these guys are going to reach their ceiling, they're all going to be A+ players, you probably pick Ja. If your goal was, hey, who do you think you got the best chance of keeping beyond that, the second contract that everyone signs? So I do think there's some cool stuff there. Ja is incredibly fun. I think that kind of where he comes from, just being from a small town, you know, if you're coming from a place where Memphis can feel like a big town, then yeah, that kind of changes perspective. So I do think there's a lot there, even though I'm sometimes hesitant to overstate it, because I think fans are going to learn how to have fun with any team that's winning. But again, this team's not headed to the conference finals. They're basically, I think, one game over 500 now, and there's a lot of connection there. The one thing that is interesting, and I'll say this is just slightly off topic from your question, but the one thing that I think is really cool about being a big fan of a franchise that is as young as the Grizzlies, and I know it's been 20, 21 years now, but that's still a very young franchise, is we keep getting to live life cycles that even if you've been a fan since day one, it's a life cycle you've never experienced. And so the grit and grind Grizzlies kind of entered not as a long-term development project, but almost as a surprise. You know, we beat the Spurs and it was kind of pedal to the metal after that to some degree in terms of starting to stack up big regular season win totals. So that was one that was like, we weren't sure if the team, if this was the beginning of something, if it was just, hey, we snuck in, let's win that first playoff game in franchise history. And it turned out to be an era. And this team is something I don't think we've ever had, which is an incredible amount of promise that we are probably going to watch grow incrementally. Not that success or progress is a straight line. Who knows what next year will bring. But this team kind of profiles as more of a step up, step up, step up. You know, hopefully it was obviously play-in game last year. Hopefully it's playoffs this year. So it's cool to see a team that is going to be really built from the ground up around young, two drafted cornerstones. So it's fun to me that we still get to experience a totally different new type of era that we haven't experienced before.
That's a great answer. And I think that you absolutely hit the nail on the head, is that that's kind of a fun aspect about things, to be a fan of a team that, you know, is still not necessarily in its infancy, but it's had a third or maybe even a fourth of the history that a lot of these other teams have had. So you do get these new versions, these unprecedented versions before. But I think you also hit the nail on the head, was that part of the reason why culture is so important is because it's always nice when you can hit on the best player available, plus a player that fits a need for your team on the roster, but even more importantly, who has a personality that fits your city. And I think that they did that with Bogeron and Ja, and that's the reason why this culture has developed organically in and of itself in its own version with this team, and it's so awesome to see, to support the success that they had on the court. But we need to get back to being successful on the court, and that's what me and Chase are going to talk about coming up before we face the Knicks tonight here at the FedEx Forum. Just a couple of ideas of how the Grizzlies may be able to get back on track from Chase. If you are a fan of wagering and betting on sports, I've got the one place that has you covered and the one place that'll make the most of your experiences, and that's betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way for you to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the news, latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and put in the promo code LOCKEDON and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device, put in the promo code Locked On to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposits. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts.
Obviously, the summer is right around the corner, and of course, all of us want to look the best that we can. One of the best ways to do that is to do small yet significant things that can allow for us to make our daily routine as healthy as possible. One of the ways to do that is a healthy yet tasty snack known as Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar that's out there in the market. Whether you have it in the morning for breakfast, in the afternoon for a snack, or whatever time you choose to enjoy it, there's over 18 different flavors you can choose from at BuiltBar.com to make the most of your experience. And if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you put in the promo code Locked On or Locked 15, you'll get 15% off your next order from Built Bar. That's 15% off your next order from Built Bar. What I might suggest is that once you make Built Bar a part of your day, it's going to be there to stay. You can go to BuiltBar.com, promo code Locked 15 to get 15% off your next order from Built Bar. Today on the Locked On Today podcast, the draft is over. Who won, who lost? That's the question of the day. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.
So, Chase, I started off the show by asking you, what is your biggest concern from this weekend's game, from this past weekend's games? I'll follow that up with this question. In terms of on the court activity, what do you feel is going to be the best way to get things back on track as we go into this week against the Knicks, the Timberwolves, several games that should be winnable, but only if we're playing to our potential?
You know, I mean, I think this is a really tough question because I do not expect or necessarily think that the total 100% win hunting ought to be the goal. We touched on that earlier. I mean, I am in the camp that says, like, let's just go ahead and get Jaren into the starting lineup. Now, maybe we don't have access to any medical information. So maybe they know, and this is totally speculation, maybe they know, hey, Jaren's minutes can bump up from 21 to 24. We can go ahead and bump him up to closer to 27 to 30. And they were waiting until that was possible to throw him in the starting lineup. I don't know, but I would throw him in there because whether he's helping or not, whether he is an asset to winning right now, Jaren is going to play. The minutes that he needs to get with Ja and to see what these other guys look like around him and Ja, it's too valuable. So I would say get him in there. As far as Jaren goes, to get back to winning and right the ship, you just got to pray. You got to pray that shot starts falling, that he gets a little more comfortable. I think he's had some kind of off timing plays. You know, the main thing is I think so much feeds off of the thing that makes Jaren good, or there are lots of things that make Jaren good. What makes him have a ceiling that is just through ceiling is through the roof, I think as someone once said, but that make him that is the shooting. I mean, the things he was doing as a three-point shooter last year are things no one has ever done at his size. And of course, the caveat applies that shooting is something different now than it was for most eras of the NBA. But nevertheless, if he can just get that falling again, it seems like an oversimplification, but the rest of his game feeds off of that. So to have Jaren play well, I think is thing one, because he's playing regardless of the qualitative value of his play. And then the other big thing is the justice question. So that argument to me revolves around framing and context, which is to say, depending on where we start from, depends on how much of a debate there can be. Because if you saddle me with sort of a given, if you say we're starting from a point where the front office wants to see what they've got in Justice and he's probably going to be back next year, and so that's a thing they're going to do, well, then I'm kind of stymied on a rebuttal. But if you don't force me to receive that as a given, then I'm somebody who, like, I've already seen enough. I really don't, I would just not pick up the option personally. And so that wouldn't be one way to right the ship. And I don't necessarily know that it's got to be that debate for me is not very much about Tyus. I think Tyus has had kind of a maybe slightly below standard Tyus year. I think most of the advanced stuff would say he's just having a standard Tyus year, honestly. But not to harp too much on the justice thing, but it's one thing to cherry pick an all-in-one metric and try to apply that to a player and say that's what he is. But when you pull up every different conceivable all-in-one metric or anything that sort of, an impact metric, when you just go across whatever site you like to use, and every time you click over one, the same player is in the bottom three, and usually the other two players are like, you know, Tim Frazier or Jonte Porter or whatever it may be. It makes it really hard to win that way, and I don't want to pin it all on him. Certainly last night was not a justice thing from what I can tell, just from reading about the game and from watching the amount that I did get to watch. But, you know, just, and again, not to get into the abstract, but just finding the mojo. Obviously, they're playing without a lot of impact. And I'm always hesitant to comment on energy because I think a lot of, oh, hey, this team is really lackadaisical. It's just when you're winning, it looks like they have energy. And when you're losing, it looks like they don't. But it's a hard question to answer because I don't know how you do it if those two guys are still going to be a big part of it. And again, I think Jaren should. But how you get back, I don't know. You just got to – I think it'll be interesting to see what happens if Grayson continues to be out because, I mean, honestly, it gets lost. But him kind of slumping after being – incandescent from three for a period of time changes things. It just seems like a lot of players, and you could attribute this to outside factors or to players coming back, but for whatever reason, a lot of guys are hitting slumps at the same time. Fatigue, obviously a factor. So that really, for a team that needs shooting to open up things for their best players, that's a tough thing to have happen. So the good news is I don't think I answered at all how to write the ship, because if I knew, probably I would be doing something else. But, the good news is it looks like the Pelicans, and I'm going to like knock on wood because I do not want to put any kind of jinx on us, but the Pelicans are probably too far back. I mean, if you finish the season like 4-5, they would have to pretty much go 8-0. I could have that one game or two off, but you know, you're probably going to be in the play-in. My bet is that your last game against Golden State, given that you've split with them thus far, there's a pretty decent chance that game decides whether or not you are 8 or 9, and it's incredibly important to be 8. I think 6 is definitely out of it, and 7 is probably out of reach at this point. But, I guess the hope, and I don't know if this is a strategy to right the ship, but the hope is that everything gets better, whether it's playing Justice less or whether he rounds into form late in the season, and then hoping that Jaren gets to a point where he can at least be, you know, contributing and fit in the rotation in a way that doesn't make everything else such a negative chaos situation around the rest of the rotation. I think the good news is if you can do some of those things just a little bit better, you've probably built yourself enough cushion that if you can just pull it together for the last couple of regular season games while eking out some of these others, you're probably still going to be in a position, hopefully, where you can have a game against Golden State where if you win it, you're going to get two chances to win one game. Now, those two chances might be against Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, but, you know, that is what it is. So, again, I don't think I did a good job of answering how to write it because I honestly don't know, because when you've got these warring ideals, I'm not sure even if you said chasing every single win is definitively the goal, I don't know if there's an obvious strategy within that. So other than to sit and watch and hope and pray, I think that's the best analysis I've got.
No, and I think that it's a very logical answer, right? Because you've got these dueling perspectives, ideals for the season, and you could talk about getting more discipline. You could talk about hopefully getting Grayson back to shoot the three, better feature your three-point shooters. Talk about all these different aspects on the court. But I agree with you. At the end of the day, you're still going to play Justice and Jaren. And at the end of the day, it's also fair to say by playing them, you're taking away from the effectiveness that you need to be able to win these games. But the goal is the long term. So I think it's a perfectly logical answer that, you know, in terms of riding the ship, it really depends on what way you want the ship to go. And the fact is that all season long, it seems up to the past week, basically, it's been in perfect synchronization no matter what perspective you were judging the season on. Hopefully it just in always, maybe Jaren and Justice can get better a bit. They find their grooves. We find our groove. It ends well, but regardless, nothing's going to make this season a lack of success. You just hope that there's more positivity than negativity to end it. Now, the thing that I want to finish on is this, Chase, is that I've seen you talk with a few other folks on Grizzlies Twitter, including a Matt Herdlicka. You are a big fan of the reality TV show The Challenge. Is that correct?
Oh, that's very correct.
So the question that I have for you is this, is that if you were to look during the Grizzlies' time in Memphis, who would be your five favorite, either former or current Grizzlies players, to be on a Grizzlies edition of the challenge?
All right, this is good. This is good. Let me think about this, because the challenge, for those who may not know, also is many eras. There have been roughly 15 more seasons of the challenge than the Grizzlies have played seasons of basketball in Memphis. So you want to have a well-rounded group. And the thing, in fact, Matt, who you mentioned, Herdlicka, and Stacey Montero, who some people may know from Twitter, and Jonah, and Chris, some other folks people may know from Twitter, we are in a challenge fantasy league. And when you're drafting a challenge fantasy league, you can get points from actual victories. So you want to prioritize some athleticism and some grit, but then you also have drama points. And so you've got to balance where that stuff is coming from. So you want a good mix of drama and also, you know, physical capacity. So I think, and I'm gonna be kicking myself after this is over, because I'll think of somebody else. But the most, and this is weird, and this is like, the recency bias is just off the charts. But one of the things you want is one of these guys or women, in the case of the challenge, but since we're talking Grizzlies, one of these guys that has sort of that killer mentality. So I'm going to go ahead and get Ja from the recent group, because he's like got that maniacal, you know, Kobe, Jordan, you know, whether some people find it performative or whether it's totally legit, you want that in a challenge competitor. Obviously the athleticism is there. He'll be good at the daily challenges, but also you just like those people who, you know, are going to absolutely lose it when their teammates are more interested in other things on the challenge. Then I think I'm going to go, let's see, I've got to go Tony, because I got to pick Tony in all things. He's kind of the mix of that. You need a little wacky in your challenge competitors. And then I think, who is a good, let's see. Some of the good early Grizzlies players are not guys I necessarily want in a challenge setting. Let me take, I'm just for the, in the interest of speed, I'm going to take Allen Iverson. You want a legend, a disgruntled legend is always a good thing to have on a challenge. To juxtapose with the youth. So I'll take him. I know you said players, but I'm taking Lionel Hollins. Anytime that there's drama, I want Lionel Hollins.
That's more than fair. That's a lot.
I didn't love everything of his coaching, but, and this is nothing against Taylor Jenkins, but man, do I long for the days of listening to Lionel's press conferences. I just, my personality is not one that particularly enjoys like coach speak and a lot of rah-rah stuff. So man, do I miss Lionel Hollins press conferences. And then the last one I'll take, and I'm going to think of so many people who would have been the perfect answer for this. And Matt is probably going to yell at me for not having better answers for this, but I'm going to take James Johnson. Cause at the end of the day, you want to see, he's one of the best overall, probably athletes outside of the context of basketball that the Grizzlies have had. And in the case that this goes the direction of some earlier challenge seasons and there's a physical altercation, like who doesn't want to see James Johnson in a physical altercation if it should come to that? So I think that'll be my five off the top of my head.
I was wondering like how far off we would get. I think that's a respectable five, certainly. James Johnson is certainly fun. If you want to add drama, throw OJ Mayo and James Johnson in there, or throw Jonas and James Johnson in there. I think that would create your drama for you for sure.
For sure. But that would be a good one. OJ for sure would be a good one.
Yeah, we'll probably, Matt is someone that we'll probably get on the show as well. But for someone, I've watched a bit of the challenge myself. I've never really gotten into it, but I see y'all's conversations every now and then when it comes to it. So I just thought it would be a fun question. But Chase, there's a reason why I got you on the show was because I love your perspectives, love obviously interacting with you. It's been absolutely wonderful. Great perspective as always. Where can folks find you and follow your Grizzlies perspective on a regular basis? And just, what are you hoping for as far as the season concludes?
So at Deep Fried Couch on Twitter, the avatar is Larry King, just for no good reason at all, other than it was like 10 years ago. The name also makes no sense anymore. It was a blog. I actually went to and graduated with a degree in journalism and was going to do the whole sports writing thing, I thought, at one point in life. So that was a now defunct blog that was like sports and movies and all kinds of stuff. So the name doesn't make sense. The avatar doesn't make sense, but that's where you can find me on Twitter. Hopes for the season. I mean, of course, I have found myself, I think, honestly, the nature of this COVID season and sort of the stress or boredom of everyday life, which hopefully through the hard work of those who came up with the vaccines, we'll get a little more towards normal. But I think during a lot of this season, I've kind of switched into more traditional fandom, just really wanting them to scratch out every game because I really want to see a playoff series. So I obviously want them to make it into the real playoffs. That would be my hope number one. But if you tell me that I don't really get to dictate that, it's what I said before. I want to see so many possessions and especially hopefully in crunch time, I want to see so many possessions of Ja and Jaren. I want Jaren to be confident in that shot so that a team is having to make an incredibly difficult decision when those two guys come together at the top of the key or wherever it might be on the court, where a team has to make a decision. Are we going to let a lethal shooter pop open to three? Are we going to watch a guy who, that same lethal shooter, who is almost 7 feet tall and has enough athleticism, his length, I think, kind of makes him seem more athletic than he might be at times, but an athletic finisher, at least, are we going to defend that? Oh, and by the way, you know, the other option is a guy who is an absolute blur, fearless attacker of the rim, going straight down our throat. So, I mean, the bubble, that's almost the most depressing part of thinking of what we lost this past year in terms of on the court Grizzlies things is in the bubble, they really started to figure it out at the end of some of those games. They were working that two-man game. And if there's anything, and I'll finish with this to go back to team identity and how excited to be about this team. I think if you want to attribute this to skill, great. One of the luckiest things about this team that everyone should be unequivocally thrilled about is in terms of personalities, Ja, yeah, he meshes with the city. But those two guys from an on-court skill set to personality difference, like you could not draw it up a better fit between two guys. And most teams that get two superstars or two young stars, a lot of times they're guys that have to learn to fit together because there's some overlap. I mean, if those guys can hit some